RNZ National, it's Friday afternoon and it's time for Critter of the Week with Nicola Tookie from Forest and Birds. Hi Nicola.
Ahi ahi marie.
I want to apologise on behalf of all Aucklanders. I don't know if you saw the story this week of a couple who were found halfway up Mount Taranaki with a couple of cats
with
in their backpacks.
What is happening?
It got a lot of attention and I said, look, yeah, it's probably not the right thing to do, but if people really want to worry about cats, probably feral cats are a bigger problem than a couple of tame Ponsonby pussies safely stowed in somebody's backpack. But it wasn't a good look.
It's not a good look. It probably wasn't that much fun for the cats. And and it is illegal. It's not a thing that you do to take, you know, your because it's in a national park, right?
Yeah.
And one of my earliest kind of memories of when you have to make tough decisions in life was we moved from Mosburn, which is a very small village in Southland, sort of towards Tiano. We moved from Mosburn to Aoraki Mount Cook National Park and we couldn't take our cat with us because we were going to be living in a national park. And there is a photo of six-year-old me holding Fluffy, who was this enormous stray black Persian cat that had wandered into my parents' life even before I arrived, and holding Fluffy sort of around under her front leg so she was like just about dangling on the ground because I'm still quite short, but I was very short then, and just tears streaming down my face because we were having to leave Fluffy with a neighbour to live. So, you know, I'm very cognizant of the fact that there's no cats in national parks.
Yeah. You knew there was a greater purpose for you. And yes, it's a lesson this couple should have learnt as well. Taranaki too is making great progress, as I understand it, on the predator-free front. So a couple of new cats from Auckland, probably not very welcome. You've been up that way recently, eh?
I have. And actually, we heard a lot from the enormous variety of people involved in the Taranaki Maunga project, which is, you know, basically breathing. But the concept is he kawa ora, or back to life. So they're kind of replenishing the life of Taranaki by taking out those predators. And so I was at the Te Tira Whakamātaki conference, which was the Māori Biosecurity Conference run by Te Tira Whakamātaki. So it was really cool. It was an amazing couple of days in New Plymouth. And we got to hear from, you know, academics and experts and things like Mātauranga Māori and understanding kind of Māori knowledge systems when you're engaging with nature, but also directly from some of these guys and girls who are up and down the, you know, the Maunga every day dealing to the predators with traps and trapping networks and bait stations, all that kind of thing. So it was a really cool experience. And then I got my own little flavour when, just before the conference started, I spent the morning with the North Taranaki Forest and Bird branch volunteers, a couple of them at least, in the pouring down rain, and one of my staff members, and we had a little stomp around one of Forest and Bird's reserves. So Forest and Bird owns like 37, I think, or so reserves up and down the country, right. And the volunteers in those places do their little bit to look after it, so they've been busy trapping and dealing to.
They would have been stoked to see their celebrity boss wandering around with them. They would have been a bit nervous, I imagine, with you showing up.
Well, I don't know about that. One of those volunteers is one of my favourite natural history authors. So I said to her, oh, I'm a bit of a fangirl. So
went both ways.
Wonderful. Yeah, it was wonderful. It was nice to get out and, you know, see the boots on the ground stuff and, you know, get out from behind the desk in the admin for a little bit.
So yeah,
that was
cool.
Kind of nice.
Well,
but please don't take your cats and backpacks into the nature anymore.
Yeah, well, you likely won't have a cat with you if you come across this week's critter, right?
Well, no, although I did once have a cat when I was a kid, and he loved to fish trout out of the creek over the back fence and then bring them onto the lawn and let them flap around in the lawn, and then we would have to all engage in emergency trout rescue to try and But no, so unless you have an underwater cat, it won't be a threat. Or the Plumosi anemone. Mimetridium cryptum. I fall into the trap that Nemo does in Finding Nemo with an anemone. Anemone.
Oh, me too. I think anemone. I think I got it wrong on the promo. I would have said anemone, but if you remember the word Nemo, then that helps you out, doesn't it?
Oh, it does. Yeah, you're quite right. Nemo is tucked within there. Anemone. It's like, actually, the other one that always trips me up is a complete aside, nothing to do with the nature, is remuneration.
Yeah.
Remuneration.
And do you know that restaurateur doesn't have an N in it?
Restaurateur. Ah, there you go.
Yeah, plenty of them.
That's your word extra for the day. Okay, so they're the Plumose anemone is one of our range of Cnidaria is the phylum that we're talking about here, just in case you really want to geek out about it. And that just means the nettle animals. So corals, sea anemones, and jellyfish all belong to the same group, which are Cnidarians, but it's spelt with a silent C. So it reads like cnidarians, which then makes me think of vermicious cnids in Roald Dahl books, but I will deviate it enough for today. So, and what the name comes from the Greek gnide, meaning nettle, because they all have this little sharp sting in their tentacles. I don't know about you, but I love me an anemone. And partly it's because they are beautiful. They are those beautiful things you find in rock pools that have these waving tentacles that look like amazing flowers, right? Mm. Like the flowers of the sea. And plumose means that they have quite like many fine filaments or branches which give them that feathery, beautiful appearance. I also probably shouldn't say this. I like to stick my fingers in them and then watch them try and catch my finger and then occasionally get like the wee feel like a wee sticky tingle of them trying to
sting
you to
and
death.
I think you've told me before that that when your finger sticks to them like that, it's actually thousands of tiny little stings.
Yeah, little harpoons being kind of shot at you, like, you know, like they're waging a little tiny person Lilliputian war on this giant human who's out to get them. So this particular anemone is beautiful. So it's translucent, sort of greeny blue, and it's only found down south, so Fiordland, Otago Peninsula, and it's quite slender and quite stunning. The reason that it has that greeny sort of glow is that this particular species has a symbiotic algae that lives within its tissues, which kind of, you know, gives it a bit of bling in terms of how it appears to the world. And It's the only anemone of its genus, and it is endemic to here in Aotearoa, New Zealand. They can be anything from a tiny 2 centimetres to 30 centimetres when extended.
And if you take a look on our webpage, rnz.co.nz/Jessie, you'll see how beautiful they are. At 30 centimetres, they must be quite something.
Yeah, and, you know, that's where you kind of get that garden kind of, you know, that beautiful flower garden kind of look. They have, like all anemones, they have kind of the mouth, you know, in the middle, a bit like the Sarlacc in Star Wars, and then they have the sort of tentacles clustered around that mouth, and the idea is that, you know, they're out there constantly looking for little things to grab from the ocean environment and then shunt it into their face. Just push it right in there, and I can relate to that. Particularly, I was thinking, one of my staff just pointed out to me that I've had a couple of very long days this week in and out of Wellington, and they were not reflective of what I try and describe to my team as good well-being. And getting a lunch break is really difficult on those sorts of days. So having a bunch of tentacles around my mouth that I could just shunt stuff in while I'm trying to get stuff done would be really helpful for me.
Yeah, that's you at a conference with your head down and your arms waving up, just grabbing sausage rolls and lamingtons as they're brought by on platters.
Yeah, just shunting them in. I did eat quite a lot of sausage rolls at the conference last week. What's kind of nice, though, is these are quite gregarious. They like to hang out together. So you see like a bouquet, if you like, of these beautiful anemones. And they have quite a nice kind of agile approach to their reproductive drive. So they can either reproduce sexually, and then what they do is they just biff out either, you know, sperm and eggs out their mouth into the sea, and then hope that that sort of sperm and egg soup all matches, sort of mashes up.
Thank you, Nicola.
You're welcome, New Zealand. That's how the scientific reflection is. Biff it out and hope that the soup all matches up. Or they can do it asexually, and they can do this either a couple of ways. They either can just kind of split off parts of themselves to start another version of themselves, or they actually can have like little buds, so more along the flower theme, of baby anemones at the base of them. Most anemones, I can't even say that word's become my nemesis now, my anemone nemesis, use both men. Not quite sure about this particular species. And what happens with these kinds of creatures is that once they've become fertilized eggs in the ocean soup out there, they hang out as little larvae and they sort of spend a bit of time as plankton, and then they settle on the seafloor and just develop into these tiny little polyps, and then away they go. They have a disc as a sort of foot, if you like, which attaches themselves to a shell or a rock down the bottom on their petal disc, and they can kind of wander around on it as well. It's quite useful. So, you know, what I suppose we're concerned about with something like this, these beautiful, fragile little creatures that are only found in these southern waters, is that there are threats like microplastics. Right, we now know that those tiny little microplastic fibers that we are finding everywhere in the sea can actually be taken in by the anemones. And the idea that they have symbiotic algae, which gives them their lovely green tinge, means that they are quite important for their survival. And the coral bleaching that's occurring down there with regard to some of the black corals, etc., which is caused by rising sea surface temperatures, is also impacting on that relationship.
So, as with so many of our critters, it's all connected. Can't have an enemy without the little, what did you call it? Algae.
Symbiotic.
Yeah,
algae.
Can't have the algae without the coral. Can't have the coral without the reduced sea temperature.
And they are an important part of the broader system, right? And this is kind of more of the things we learnt last week in New Plymouth, the Māori worldview about everything being connected and we all have a role to play. Some of these anemones can live for up to 80 years, and there's over 1,000 species of anemone worldwide. They are not something that we want to lose. We want to love the anemone, not make an enemy of the anemone.
Very good. A quick shout out before you rate this thing. Quick shout out to pioneering marine biologist Betty Batham, who was around the middle of the 20th century and did all sorts of work on these anemones and others. And, you know, big deal for a woman to be out there scuba diving in the 30s and 40s. They wouldn't have known what to make of her.
She actually helped describe it in the 50s, you know, when 50s kind of women, you know, careers for women in the 50s were fairly limited. And she was a really well-known scientist and lecturer. So, there's a really cute story about her. She used to have to kayak her equipment to the lab out at Portobello in Otago, the New Zealand Marine Studies Centre, because there was no road access.
Yeah, amazing.
So she'd jump in her kayak and get all her kit together and go out there. So shout out to Betty.
Okay. How would you rate the attractiveness of the Plumosa anemone on a scale of 1 to 10?
As we are moving towards spring and I am desperate to watch those beautiful flowers pop up in the terrestrial world, I'm going to give them, I reckon they're a 6.8. I love me a flower, underwater or otherwise.
Have a wonderful weekend, my friend. Great to chat to you as always.
Thanks, Jesse. Same to you.
Nicola Tookie for Critter of the Week. And if you'd like to take a look at the anemone yourself, it's on our website, rnz.co.nz/Jesse. Handing over now to Wallace Chapman and the panel.